We spent a lot of the 20th century dealing with discrimination and working to end it within government and schools and society. Much of that focused on civil rights for African Americans. Native Americans face discrimination, too. Our guest this hour is Native American and grew up in a community that, in places, displayed signs that said, "No Indians welcome." Agnes Baker Pilgrim lived long enough to see both tribal termination and tribal restoration. She's the author of a book called Grandma Says, Wake Up, World, put out by Ashland-based Blackstone Publishing. Tao Hwai Hui, or Agnes Baker Pilgrim, is the oldest surviving member of the Tequelma tribe, which, with all other tribes in southwestern Oregon, was forced to live near the Oregon coast, forming the Confederate tribes of the Siletz. She's lived long enough to see signs that said no dogs or Indians in store windows as a kid, to being honored as one of the 13 indigenous grandmothers for the whole planet as an adult. Agnes Baker Pilgrim, Tao Hwai Hui, thanks for joining us on The Exchange.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it.
The introduction of the book talks about sitting in a studio. And so the book really came from studio sessions, it sounds like, at Blackstone Audio.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I did that. And they put this on CDs first. Then from the CDs, they took that and put it into print, into a book. And I'm pretty proud of it. Mm-hmm. And so we have some corrections. They never let me to critique the book before they printed it, and so we got to make some corrections. And I talked to the studio, and the next printing will have all the corrections in it, so mm-hmm. I'm grateful for that.
Now, there are some things I'm sure that won't change. For example, you talking about the most difficult 14 inches to travel from brain to heart. Explain that concept.
Well, I think it's the longest journey, the hardest journey that any human can make is from their thinking thing, that brain, to your heart. And I always say when you get there, you'll know who you are, what you're supposed to be doing, and where you're going. I call it the aha stage. Aha, now I know who I am. Aha, now I know what I'm supposed to be doing. And aha, now I know where I'm going. So I think that people will agree with me. Many people that I've said that to said that they thought that was the hardest journey too.
Do some people never make it, you think? Do some people just never quite get to that?
Oh, they don't. They don't. They just flounder along the wayside, you know. Many of them laying around in the streets and stuff today with no goals in mind at all. And it's sad. We got one life and one time to walk this planet, just once. And I always say that we got the greatest gift from our beloved Creator, and that was life. He gave us life. And then he gave us this thinking thing called the brain, and he put it at the top of our body to rule the rest of it. And so how you run your brain is how you will face the world. And I feel sad for so many people that I have met. They're down in doom and gloom. And I said, I can't change no one but myself. So I don't like to be around people that are just doom and gloom. Mm-hmm. And it's a sad life that they live that way.
You advise people to stay on the red road. What is the red road?
Red road is truth, integrity, compassion, love, kindness, all that good stuff when you're on the red road. Because, you know, when you get to be as old as I am and a leader in your family, I have five generations, and I have 14 in my five generations of little people. And so to walk before them, I always say I walk my talk, that I don't try to lie about anything, because the Creator would know immediately. So I really think that how you run your brain, you know, it, as you get older, and if your grandparents are listening, you know, you are a leader in your community, and each one of you got a story. You are the wisdom keeper. So I pray that you could treat all children with love, because I always say you don't have to born a child to love it, mm-hmm. you know. And so how you run your life in front of children and in front of your family is a leadership role. And I pray that if you're a grandparent, that you kind of look at your role. What is the legacy when you leave and go to the Star Nation? What is the legacy you're going to leave your children? You know, it's an important thing. If you want your children to be strong and have compassion and love and stuff, then you better have it to walk in front of them that way. Because I told all my children, I can't give you love, I can't give you kindness, I can't give you joy, happiness, smiles, compassion, contentment, and all that good stuff. Those are your inside job. So I told them, if you want kindness and you want love, you better create it inside yourself so that you have it to give it away.
Over the course of 91 years, has there just been a constant search for spiritual truth?
Yes.
It never stops.
Yeah, never stops. You know, I'm just grateful to wake up in the morning to have one more day, you know, because I've been at death's door and I've been so much pain that I begged to die. But here I am, grateful to the beloved Creator, my God, that gave me another day. All of us can only do one day at a time, no matter who we are. You know, and I pray that people are listening, that you too are grateful to have one more day.
All right. We will talk more with Agnes Baker Pilgrim, Tao Huai Hui. She has written a book called Grandma Says Wake Up World, The Wisdom, Wit, Advice, and Stories of Grandma Aggie. We'll come back and talk more with her and take your phone calls and emails if you'd like to join us. We'll be back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 30. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Agnes Baker Pilgrim, who also goes by Tao Huai Hui, her Tekelma name. She is at 91, the eldest surviving member of the Tekelma tribe. And she's also the author of a book out from Blackstone Publishing in Ashland called Grandma Says Wake Up World, distilled from an interview in the studio at Blackstone Audio a few months ago. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange with questions or comments for Agnes Tao Huai Hui, 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. You grew up in Lincoln County, near or on the Siletz Reservation?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And that's the gathering of essentially of 27 separate tribes, all just forced
all
to live in that
together,
part of it. Yeah.
That's why it's called a confederated tribe.
Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking there were people alive when you were growing up who might have who were young enough to remember the march, actually to the reservation.
Yeah,
were there?
No, they're not any now.
Not now, of
course. Because that was in 1853.
Well, yeah, but in the 1920s and 30s, there might have been a few who were still around to remember that.
Oh, yeah, way back there then, mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, you described the march to the Siletz, people mostly carrying food and little else. I mean,
well, yes, that's all. They said they could have, you know, could take something, and of course they first thought of food. And so they just had the clothes on their back. You know, and they had to walk over 200 miles over rough terrain and inclement weather. And many of them fell on the wayside. And, of course, our young people that were here were taught to take care of their elders. And so they'd run back and pick them up. But the guards told them that if they did that again, that they'd just leave the elders at the wayside for animals to eat.
Hmm.
And so it was a treacherous, dangerous, horrible journey for them, that 200 and some miles to Siletz. And then when they got there, the agent had used up some of the money. And there wasn't enough food and blankets to go around. Many of them perished, and which was sad. And in that group was my grandfather, my mother's dad, Chief George Harney, who was the first elected chief of the Confederated Tribes of Siletz. And this is one of the reasons why I am careful about my walk, because not only was my grandfather a chief, but his father, Jack Harney, was a chief. And also my grandfather's great uncle's chief, there was another Chief George, Chief Jim, Chief Limpy, and Chief Bill. And so when I was called on a spiritual walk, I said, I can't do it because I'm not worthy. I'm not good enough to follow behind. It's just like having all kings in front of you. You know, I was really scared to try to walk behind in their footsteps. And but anyway, I finally, years went by of denying that calling, and finally I chose to accept it. But it's been a bumpy road.
So you described the calling, a spiritual calling then. What were you being called to do, and by whom?
Well, I was called by the Creator to be a voice for the voiceless. I was living in Crescent City and had an office over there. And when I was called to be the voice for the voiceless, I thought, dear God, what does that mean, to be a voice for the voiceless? I'd taken a break from my office and was sitting out in my house on a deck, and I had a little stand there with a glass of water on it, and my big dog, Sagap, was laying down by my feet. So I was sitting there pondering this calling for the Creator to do this spiritual walk. And I said, you better give it to somebody else because I'm not worthy. And I kept saying that. I don't know what you mean being a voice for the voiceless. Tell me what you mean. And as I was sitting there, the wind came up blowing the tree right there by my deck. Oh, I said, wind. The air doesn't have a voice except ours, as humans. Oh, Grandfather, is that it? To be a voice for the wind? Oh, my. And then I reached over and got my water off of this little table, and my eyes were just drawn to the water inside the glass, and I thought, oh, you don't have a voice either. Oh, and Grandfather, I said, the water within us, I said, doesn't have a voice except ours. And we cannot live without water. Oh, to be a voice for the water. Just then my big dog stood up and put his head on my knee. And I was patting his head, looking at him, and I said, oh, you don't have a voice either. Oh, Grandfather, the animal kingdom. That's what you mean, to be the voice for the voice of those things that don't have a voice. I understand. I'll do my best, dearly beloved, to be this voice. And so I was traveling the world where people called me. And I was doing water blessings all over the world because Spirit told me that I was born in water, that all of us humans were born in water, in the amnio sac in our mother's stomach. And that water was our first medicine. We have to guard it with our life and to protect it. And so here I am going around the world telling people, stop the pollution in our rivers and streams and oceans. It's got to stop. We got to learn to take care of our water. Then I found out that water could hear through Dr. Emoto, this Japanese scientist who passed away some years ago, bless his heart, a nice man, I've been with him several times, that he had proven that water could hear. And so I was teaching this all over the world for us to begin to take care of the water. Because I said, how long can we live without water? 3 days, 4 days, 5 days? You know, and it's scary. Never did I think I'd get this old and have to buy water in a bottle. And then when they fill those bottles and they load them up in a truck and they bring them into the stores, sit them on the shelves, by the time us consumers get a hold of them, is all elements and chemicals still in there? Or does it leak out through the plastic? You know, I'm curious.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about, so once you decided to take on the calling that you got, how did the gathering of the indigenous grandmothers from around the world come together?
Oh, we were called before 2004. And I pondered it for a couple of months, and then I thought, I better join it, because I wanted people, I've been praying when I was being a voice for the voices that I'd get some more voices. So I thought, oh, yes, maybe I'll get them to help me. So then we all came from around the world, and we met in Phoenicia, New York, and then they took us from there back to Menlo Park, where all the monks and the lamas go for their retreats, a beautiful compound. And so we all gathered there October 11th, 2004. And I, as the eldest, they had nominated me the chairperson. And I was the chair for the 13 International Grandmas for 10 years. Bless their hearts. Some of them are having terrible times with their health right as we speak. But I continue to pray for them. Beautiful women, all medicine women. And it was beautiful how we got along with different ones walking with our medicines. And it was beautiful, the care and the love of those grandmothers, you know, that they have for the little ones of the world, because I say that us adults are not the one that own the world. It's the little people, the children. They're the owners of the world. And us adults better take better care of it. Because I've got a lot of great-great-great-great-grandchildren that I'd love for them to grow up and be gray-headed like me and have good air and good water. So I work hard being that voice.
Agnes Baker Pilgrim is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Also goes by Tao Huai Hui. She is the author of a book called Grandma Says Wake Up World, The Wisdom, Wit, Advice, and Stories of Grandma Aggie, which grew pretty much out of a session like this in another audio studio. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Your comments and questions are welcome at 800-838-3760 or by email jx@jeffnet.org. Thank you for waiting. Vajra in Sunny Valley, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. Vajra, go ahead. Is the lineup? All right, well, not there. Let's try David Nashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. David, you there? Okay, something is not wired correctly on the other side. We'll see if we can get to that and fix that. Let's go back to your beginnings, because nine kids in your family.
Yes. Wow. I was a third from the end,
mm-hmm.
and they're all gone. All my brothers and sisters and all of them are all gone. I'm the only elder left, and many of my brothers and sisters' children call me Auntie Grandma, and I love it. And so I do prayers every day for my brothers and sisters' children's children's children.
How did you all make ends meet when you were growing up in such a big family, your mother,
father,
nine kids?
Well, my brothers and my dad were some top loggers, the logging industry at that time. And so they were that all working in the Forest Service, and because that was the only type of job at those days,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so it was, we had gardens. You know, we grew most all our food. I don't ever remember being hungry for anything. And as I grew up, I look back at that and thank God for all of the hard work of my brothers and dad and all of them planting things, and how that I was 3 years old and I had to take care of four plants. They showed me the difference between a weed and a plant. So I had to keep the weeds out.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad took a tomato can, punched some holes in it and put a wire handle on it. And I had to go down to the creek and get water for my four little plants. And as I grew older, I had more rows to take care of before I went to school, all of us. We had to take care of our garden before we went to school. And I was just a little kid when they dammed up the creek And they had a big platform down there. They took care of the salmon, and they would gut them out, throw them down in the where we dammed up the creek. And us kids would have to splash around out there and wash the fish, wash the eels. And so we all had our chores. You know, we had the chickens to take care of. Mm-hmm. We had to hold the lamb tails on a block of wood, and my dad would cut them off. And he'd have a big stick with a lot of gauze on the end, and he'd put turpentine on the lamb's tail. At the end of the day, his kids were just splattered with blood. And poor little lambs, but that was the best thing for their health, to cut off their long tails.
Mm-hmm. Where did you go to school as a child?
I went to school at Logsdon, Oregon, L-O-G-S-D-E-N, near the headwaters of the Sletz River. In a one-room schoolhouse. And anyway, I was in the sixth grade, and they found out that I was sleeping too, going to sleep in my class. They found out I was taking care of my mother at night. And I had her bed close to her, and she had a long stick that she'd poke me up to wake her up, wake me up to give her medicine. So I lost sleep. So when they found that out, then they put all my classes in the morning and let me have lunch. And then I could sleep in the teacher's room, and then they'd wake me up at 4 o'clock to catch the bus to go home.
Wow.
And so they were really good to me in the schools. And I loved going to school. And they jumped me from the sixth grade into the eighth grade. And I grew up at a time in Lincoln County where they had signs on restaurants at different places where dogs and Indians weren't allowed. Hmm. You know, it was a terrible time for First Nation people, and for them to treat us like that and put us on reservations like they did. Took us all from Southern Oregon in 1853 and marched us up to Sletz. And, but anyway, my grandfather was elected the chief up there, and he did a good job. My grandmother that he married, Elizabeth Toll, Grand Round Indian, she said he was a far seer, meaning that when he made decisions as a chief, he made it for years ahead, how it would affect people and children and all that before he would consent to some sort of document. Hmm. And so my grandma said he was a foreseer to do that.
Let's take some of those phone calls we tried to get before. Vajra and Sunny Valley, we'll try it again. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, wonderful. Good morning, Grandmother Agnes.
Good morning to you, too.
So wonderful to hear you here. I have a comment and then a question. I am so grateful for the work that you and the grandmothers do. It is extraordinary. As just the thought of traveling the way that you have, all of you as grandmothers, all around the world, doing your going to each woman's homeland. Maybe you'd talk a little bit about that. But I wanted to also specifically address how you grandmothers visited the Vatican and in trying to get Papal Bull rescinded that caused so much damage and suffering for the indigenous people. You know, the Papal Bulls for
Vajra. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and did you know, Grandmother, that just a couple of days ago the UN declared that the Holy See, the Vatican, is responsible and accountable to indigenous people for the effects of the legacy of racist colonial Papal Bulls and doctrines.
Ooh.
Wow, that's amazing. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for that, Vajra. And let's hear some from Aggie about her experiences.
Well, but, you know, we went to Rome, and we wanted to meet then with Pope John, but we didn't get an audience with him. And I'm still pursuing that, Vajra, that Papa Bull that was done in 1493 by the sixth Pope of the Vatican. And I said, there's nobody alive today had anything to do with that. How they went, that word, you know, went around the world, like when Columbus come to the East Coast, he saw and met with the Six Nations over there. he'd seen this land was occupied, and they were pagan and heathen, meaning they weren't Roman Catholic. So when he left, the word went around the world that our land here was occupied. So the next thing you know, that started the Trail of Tears across the United States. Some tribes were completely wiped out. And so I keep trying to pursue that Papa Bull, because no indigenous people of lands around the globe ask for what happened to them. I worked in the justice system for nearly 20 years, and I see the inequality. I see the injustice. And I think that it should change and give us all equality and justice.
We'll talk more about the experiences of Agnes Baker Pilgrim, Tao Huai Hui, with the 13 indigenous grandmothers, of which she was one and was the boss of them for 10 years or so. We'll talk more with her about her life and her observations about the life on the planet Earth when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange with your phone calls and emails in a minute 30. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Agnes Baker Pilgrim, who also goes by Tao Huai Hui. At 91, she's the oldest surviving member of the Tequelma tribe, which was one of the tribes, along with all the others in southwestern Oregon, that were shipped off to the Siletz Reservation in the middle of the 19th century. She grew up in that area, but has been all over our region and all over the world now as one of the 13 indigenous grandmothers. Her speaking has also become a book created from an audio session at Blackstone Books. It's become Grandma Says Wake Up World, the wisdom, wit, advice, and stories of Grandma Aggie. And you can join us on the Jefferson Exchange, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. We have another phone call. Here's one from David in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Agnes Baker Pilgrim.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to thank you, Grandma Aggie, for your lifetime of service.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. I've worked with Grandma Aggie. My name's Teacher David, and Grandma, we've worked before in the schools, and I wanted to say that when she comes to schools locally, she tells amazing stories and shares her memories, and she never really charges anything at all. She just asks for a donation. Grandma, you're so humble and generous, and I just want to invite listeners that are interested in helping out Grandma Aggie's causes. There's so many ways to do it, because there's a lot of local Native elders that still struggle with some of their basic needs, and so this legacy of finding housing and stuff is still present today. Grandmother's Empowerment Project is helping Grandma out, and I wanted, Grandma, if you get a chance, to speak about the one-leggeds, because I know that you're really trying to speak to those voiceless people.
All right. Thanks for that, David. Appreciate it. So the one-leggeds, tell us about that.
Oh, I teach that all over the world, the one-legged. Uh-huh. It's the tree people, I call them. All the trees, you know, we should be rooted like the trees, you know, always centered, standing on Mother Earth and our heads pointed towards the heavens like the trees. And I always say, when a tree breathes, I breathe. And I always think and talk to the cloud people, which I call the clouds. The cloud people to come and water the trees so that all the greed on Mother Earth, we get our oxygen. And so I'm always thankful when the rains come and the water's the green, for people to be able to breathe. And it's a big concern of mine. I fought logging companies, to clear-cut logging, to road building, to erosions that they never put the roads to bed when they get done. When it rains, we have a lot of rain in Oregon, we have a lot of runoff. And if we don't put the roads to bed, then that stuff all comes down the mountain, gets into the rivers and the creeks. And it's our job to take care of the water and quit making garbage jumps out of them. You know, took 21 years of people standing up with me to see that the dams are all off the river in southern Oregon. And so it took 21 years that I restored the sacred salmon ceremony in 1994. And so I brought it back. And the 1995, the state Fish and Game came and said, "We don't know what you've done, Grandma, but there's more fish in that river than we ever heard of." I said, "When you teach reciprocity, how to give back, our Creator blesses." So I did 21 years of calling people together to stop the garbage in the rivers and streams. That's all of our job, you know, to take care of that, you know, because, you know, I grew up with the fish, you know, and it was, cut my teeth on them. And I've always been concerned about our salmon, not just around here in Oregon, but all over the world. You know, the oceans, I've been down to San Francisco under the bridge, my daughter Nadine and I, and every wave that came over on the tops of the crest of those waves was garbage. We just stood there and cried. And so I pray that people are listening. Let's take care, better care of our water. Without it, we cannot live. You better start thanking it for your life. And it's in your blood, it's in your spit, it's in your tears. And I believe people get Alzheimer's and have dementia because they don't drink enough water to coat those little cells in your brain because you got a lot of them. So think about it. If you want your brain to keep it going for you, you better drink your water and thank it for your life. When you shower, wash your clothes, wash your hands. When you cook, wash your car, water the lawn. You know, flush the toilet. Wherever you use water, bless it and thank it, because water can hear.
In fact, just a moment ago, when we were in the commercial break, the underwriting break, you asked for a cup of water, and there it was, but you blessed it before you drank it. Every time, right?
Yes, yes.
So the spiritual calling came relatively late in life, I understand. I mean, you'd mentioned working in the justice system for 20 years. That was in Crescent City,
yeah,
right? In what capacity?
Well, I was a liaison between the school and the home for the first coordinator that they had. And so I was doing a lot of stuff and helping children, helping young kids, whether it was a jacket they needed or shoestrings, or whether it was some milk, or I got lunches at school for the kids, because a lot of alcohol and drugs played a big part in kids' lives. And parents didn't have money for milk for them, for to have even a bowl of cereal. I'd go around and find out what was happening and help those kids. And if it was they didn't have a jacket, I'd run around and gather up jackets. And if they didn't have shoestrings, because if they didn't have shoestrings on their shoes, they couldn't go out and play in the wintertime because if the shoe fell off and their sock got wet, then they could get a cold. And so I'd go out to the parents and find out what was happening so that, you know, that they could have shoestrings or a warm jacket or food, and help those kids. I went around, gathered up money to buy tickets to teach them all how to swim, because we're surrounded with water all the time, and we're water babies, all of us. And so I got the kids to learn how to swim. And I did a lot of things for young kids, you know, and to help them in schools, whether it was needing tutoring or whatever the need was. And so when Indians went to get employed, and if it was in the fish plant, I'd go up to Hoopa and talk to the Bureau of Indian Affairs and get some money for them to start up clothes to go to work in a fish plant. A lot of things.
It seems like that's a pretty good indicator of your general approach to life, though, is to think big but to act in small, concrete ways to get the goals of the larger goals like justice achieved.
Yes. Yeah, and I worked when a child was taken away from its mother when she went to the hospital and it was sick and it had blue marks on its bottom, and they'd grab the child and take it from the mother and put it in a safe house and thinking she was abusing that child. So I had to gather up all the staff in the hospital and tell them, "She didn't abuse that child. Those are birthmarks. And all my children had them." And so I had to get that straightened out, not only at the hospital, but at the police station. And so to get that corrected. And also I worked in the courtroom, you know, and told the jurors, if that young man that's up there before the judge, I said, if he doesn't look you in the eye, don't say he's guilty, because he was taught not to do that. And things like that I taught jurors to watch out for, you know?
Talk about justice on a broader scale, because particularly at this moment in history, it seems like there's a lot of effort to continue to provide justice for all on the planet, but that it continues to slide backwards, even in this country, in the realm of justice for non-white people.
Right. And I grew up with that. I was a second-class citizen. You know, and I felt, well, I'm just as good as, and so were many of all our people, you know, and... Our people were such nice people in my background, my elders. And they would just fight for anybody, whether, you know, for injustice upon our people. Many of the cavalry a long time ago would even go and kill a whole bunch of family and make it look like the Indian people did it. You know why they did that? It's because they wanted the war to go on like that so they could draw a government check. And that's sad. That's a sad reason. You know, we've been all around the world trying to get people to join up and help us to get that Papa Bull rescinded. I'm still working on that. I still want that.
So you never did meet with the Pope in person, is that
no,
right?
No, I wanted to meet with him when he came to Washington, D.C., Pope Francis, because right. I think he's got the humility, and I think he would listen to how we feel about this injustice. And I think he would try to do something about it. But when he was here, I was already had appointments in Italy. So I couldn't go to Washington, D.C., but I'm still trying to get his ear.
Well, you haven't met the Pope, but you have met the Dalai Lama at least once, right?
Oh, I've been with the Dalai Lama. I've been over in India at his place and at the Dharamsala. I've been with him many times all over. Even last time was over here at Sonoma State in California. And I'm with him many times. And so we gave certificates to unsung heroes around the world and out of Sonoma. And it was the last I was with him, the last time. Him and I filled the Veterans Auditorium in Portland, mm-hmm. around 4,000 people that time. And he likes it when I tell how we were driven from our homeland, put on reservations. I told him it was like how he was driven out of Tibet and couldn't live there, and how that they ended up in India. It's like us. We were put on reservations and couldn't go back, you know. So that injustice still goes on with him.
We have a question here from Carter in Wolf Creek who emailed it in. He wants to know why Native American children are taught not to look others in the eye, as you mentioned a moment ago.
Well, they thought it was a disrespectful thing. Some of the elders felt like if you stare at somebody, that's being impolite. And so they were taught not to look like that. Look at somebody when they're talking and staring them in the face.
Different subject. You mentioned being in great pain and actually wanting to die. You were seriously ill with cancer more than 30 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
What happened?
Oh, I had cancer in the colon, and they took about a foot and a half of my colon out. And then I got it up in my breast, and I've had mastectomies. And then I got infection in that. The tube was plugged. And I was quarantined in the hospital in severe pain. My daughter that's with me, she took care of me then, years ago, in 1982. And then in December of that year, I had cancer again. They called me a miracle patient because they said they usually detect it the first time, but they didn't. So anyway, here I am, a survivor, mm-hmm. and I'm very grateful.
How would we sum up your general philosophy? It sounds like it's along the lines of you give as good as you got. You give all the time. And hope
it all bases on integrity, you know. How honest are you? You know, even in thoughts, do you think bad thoughts? Because I have to think the Creator could look at those too. You know, so I don't, Creator told me a long time ago, don't get mad at what you read, what you hear, or what you see. That's hard on your heart, and you got other things to do. You know, so I listened. And to this day, you can ask my daughter this with me right now. She takes care of me, and I said, I could find something to get mad at 10 times a day, but I don't, you know. You know, anger is a barrier. Because I used to teach my kids, I'll teach you about anger. And I said, you watch Muhammad Ali when he boxes, how he antagonizes his opponent, gets him so flustered and mad that Ali would win every time. I said, see, that's what anger does. And so it's true. It's a barrier. So if you're angry, don't be praying because it's not going to go anywhere.
Life is praying all the time. Is that part of your routine as well?
Well, I'm always giving thanks all the time for everything. Even my car ride in, the minute I get it, bless you, Mother Earth, because all this car came from you. You know, people don't think like that. When I turn the fight, I still drive. And when I turn the key on, I said, I got a good Sky Pilot. If yours don't work, you can borrow mine, you know.
Well, it's been a pleasure to see you once again. I've known Tao Wai Wee for many years since working on a production of Black Elk Speaks in Ashland in the mid-90s, and it's just great to see you again.
Yes, thanks, Jeff.
Her book is called Grandma Says Wake Up World, The Wit, Wisdom, Advice, and Stories of Grandma Aggie. Tao Wai Wee, Agnes Baker Pilgrim, thank you again so much for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.